Tonight we gather to honor that little boy's faith and his Christmas charity. We're talking The Christmas Gift. Hit it. It was 1986. Michael and Jennifer were popular baby names. The Fox Broadcasting Company was launched. Halley's Comet appeared in the night sky, and John Denver starred in a proto-Hallmark Christmas movie. I'm your host, Jerry D., with another episode of Totally Rad Christmas, the podcast that talks all things Christmas in the 80s. Toys, movies, specials, music, and fads. If it was gnarly during Christmas in the 80s, we got it covered. Now, before I introduce my guest, it's time for the 80s word of the day. As always, it comes from the Dictionary of 1980s Slang by Rick Carlisle. Today's word is on the jazz. An adjective, to be not only psyched and focused on the mission at hand, but in complete resonant harmony with the rhythm of the moment. This allows one to perform dazzling, apparently miraculous feats of inspired improvisation. For example, he's on the jazz, man. He's on the jazz. From the A-Team, episode Black Day at Bad Rock, 1983. Use it all the time. Now joining me is a totally rad Christmas all-star. You'll remember her from the episode A Mom for Christmas from Netflixmas. It's Lonnie Cuomo. Lonnie, what's happening?
Nothing much, just a name change. Hey.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think the last time you were on it was Holly.
Yeah. Holly's always been a nickname since I was like 21, 22. When I did roller derby, I had a roller derby named Holly Lolly.
Oh, nice.
So when I started comedy, I was just like, I'll just call me Holly, because like I don't want none of these strangers to know my actual personal life.
Yeah, I dig it.
And then it just didn't feel like right, didn't feel like me, so I just changed it back to Lonnie. So
okay,
kept the last right name the same, because it's my last
case,
name.
Just in case no one knew. Yeah. We're going to protect your anonymity by keeping your last name.
Oh, man. My husband has a different last name than me because we decided not to change. And then my grandma, she wrote it out to Holly and then my husband's last name. And I'm just like, Grandma, that's my name is still the same as when I was born. And I was like, you still wrote a check in 2021, 2022? I'll take it. Thank you so much. But she sent
like,
me
call
one.
Me whatever you want, just keep it coming.
Yep.
Yeah, I hear you.
I really like the on the jazz phrase. At first when you said jazz, I was like, ugh, my dad listened to jazz growing up, lame. And then I heard the actual definition, I was like, no, that's pretty tight. I might slip it into my like comedy set,
right?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't done it yet, but every time I do one of these words and someone says it, I feel like I need to do that Pee Wee Herman, you know, thing where everybody just kind of screams every time they say it.
Yeah. You all remember what to do whenever anyone says a secret word, right?
Scream!
Right! For the rest of the day, whenever anyone says a secret word, scream real loud!
She'd be like, I'm on the jazz.
Good screaming, everybody.
She's got like bells everywhere, fireworks right? popping off behind me. My dog's
confetti,
going absolutely
yeah.
nuts. Oh, that'd be so great.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're doing well. So yeah, you've been, you got married since the last time we spoke. So congratulations on
Thanks.
That.
It's been a while. I feel like it was like, oh, I just talked to Jerry a few months ago. And it's like, nope.
Right.
It was years.
I was thinking the same thing. And I was like, has she not been on the show in that long? It was just one of those where, like my first year, I was just every Christmas podcaster I could find.
Oh,
I was
yeah.
like, you got to come on the show, man. It'll be fun. Yeah. You know, let's help each other out. And then like last year was a lot of reaching out to other genre podcasts. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, I don't think I've talked to Sorry. Well, I was going to call you Holly. I don't think I've talked to Lonnie in like a long time. It's like, I think the last time was when we did Christmas Chronicles 1 and 2. Oh, on your show. Yeah.
Because Scarlett and I took a little break from our podcast because she went back to college. She went back to undergrad as a 30-year-old. And
good for her, by
the way. She wants to take the podcast and do, I know, I'm so proud of her. She wants to take the podcast and do kind of like a radio skit type thing with it. So she's been writing scripts and stuff for her like filmmaking classes, and she wants to use her podcast. I mean, she better do something with it with her 150,000 TikTok followers.
Oh, snap.
She went viral talking about like being a 30-year-old going back to college and hanging out with all these Gen Z kids and their yeets and their dabs or whatever.
Oh man, I have no idea. I'd be so out of place. I'd be like, what's up, dude? Like, I'd be like, what? What are you talking
like,
about?
Like, hey, you guys up in the jazz or whatever? I forgot the phrase.
Gotta be on the jazz, man.
There you go. Man, if you went back to college, Jerry, I really think that the 80s would come alive again. Because you just be like telling all these kids these cool phrases and showing these kids like just cool movies and toys.
It sounds like a movie. I think this is a movie, right?
Where's Scarlett?
We gotta make this happen. Write it out for me. Let's film this.
What is it, Billy Madison, but like totally Radisson or something? Or he like goes back to school.
Hey, I'll take it. Oh man, but speaking of movies in the 80s, we're talking tonight The Christmas Gift with John Denver.
Everyone I've met believes in Santa Claus.
He discovered the town where Christmas lives, and to save it, he has to rediscover his heart. John Denver in The Christmas Gift Sunday.
Now, this is one that I had like zero experience with. As I was doing some research on possible things, this popped up on my Tubi randomly, and I was like, "Huh, mm-hmm. What's that?" And I know John Denver because my in-laws are like super into John Denver, so I was like, "Okay, let me check it out." And it was kind of Hallmarky, so it reminded me of you guys and some of the stuff that you cover on your show. So I was like, "I gotta get you on to talk this one." But I really didn't have much experience with this one. What about you?
I didn't have any experience with it. I mean, I'd heard of John Denver, but like my people probably get mad at me for admitting this, but I honestly don't care. I like heard of John Denver. I didn't know if I'd heard any of his songs. Like I probably did. And I was just like, I don't freaking know. But I'd for sure never seen him acting, let alone in a made for TV movie. So I was really curious, and I wanted to go into this movie with like an open mind, because I'm like, I'm trying to be like positive and like, you know, one with the earth or whatever. Jerry, I'm slightly offended this movie reminded you of me to ask. Not really, I'm just kidding, but like
structurally, that's all, just structurally.
I get it. Thank you for thinking of me to be on your podcast. I do appreciate it, and I really wanted to be nice about this movie, but We'll see.
I know what you mean. And there was a charm to it. I did like a lot of the decorations. Yeah. Like it felt very Christmassy.
It did.
Some of the acting wasn't spectacular.
I would say more than some.
Yeah, I was just trying to be nice. But yeah, you know, it, yeah. I mean, like, what's her name? Jane Kesmerick. I thought she did a great job. John Denver, you can tell he's not an actor, but for a singer, I thought he was serviceable.
You're spot on. You know. I'm just going to agree with you on all those points. Even the sum of the acting, actually everybody but John Denver was like really good. Like the little girl. Yeah. She was excellent at the little girl.
Yeah.
She was so good.
I was surprised with that too. Most child actors, you're like, oh, okay, next. Mm-hmm. But I was like hardly ever annoyed with her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was annoyed with her choices. I was definitely annoyed with the character, but the actress herself, amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, there's this one look that she gives. It's like when he says, you know, we're going to go away or something. Or no, they just get there. And I think she's like lying in her bed and he's like, you got to write your letter or whatever. And she gives a look, you know, he says something about his mom or her mom, you know, and she gives this look. And I was like, wow, that's like a deep acting choice for the kid. This look she gave it, like, actually, like, wow, okay, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, the rest of the time, you're right. She did a pretty good job. But there's like actors in here, like Kurtwood Smith. You know,
who's that? Is that Red from that 70s show?
Yes, that was okay. Red. So.
I knew. It's like I recognized. Oh, the nun from all the nun movies
from Sister Act. Yeah.
As soon as I saw her, I was like, this is the first time I've seen her with hair. I've only seen her.
Well,
in
she's
the
also
Habit.
the housekeeper in White Christmas of the General. Like when they go to the inn, she's also like the housekeeper there. But
you know,
but yeah, like
I'd
never seen her in anything else really, except Sister Act and that. So this was like, okay, so she does act.
People probably hate me for this, but I don't watch a lot of like classic Christmas movies just because like that's my vibe. I live my life, Jerry.
Hey, you do you. But you know, you because you covered stuff like what's the one on Netflix? The what's it called?
The Vanessa Hudgens one, but the girl from New Zealand that has a American accent and she like sneaks her way into a palace.
That's the one. I cannot think of the name to save my life.
I can't either.
Well, yes, like you've done, you know, you did that one, and I was like, there's hints structurally of like that movie and a lot of these Hallmark style movies in this made for TV CBS movie. So it's like, okay, I get it. You know, they're like going in this direction, but you can tell it's like not polished yet. Like now they have a formula, it's down, you know?
Yeah. I definitely saw where it was like the beginnings of like trying to figure out like a romantic plot formula. But for me, I was like really thinking about this. Like I was like, I'm gonna make Jerry proud. I'm gonna really watch this damn movie. So I was thinking about it and I was like, honestly, this is a Christmas movie with romantic elements. I definitely wouldn't call it a Christmas romance movie because like the romance wasn't the main plot point, even though they really hammed up the fact that he was a widower. So I was just like,
oh yeah.
I was like,
so much so that he sings a song about it.
You know what? I don't. We'll get into the song, Gary. We'll get into the song. So many opinions on it.
Have you heard like the actual released version of that song?
Okay. I've done a deep dive into this darn song. I've heard three different versions, the movie version, the version of just John Denver, and then the version with him and Sylvie Vartan.
I didn't think it could happen again. Just too old and set in my way. I was convinced I would always be lonely all of the rest of my day. Maybe I give up on romance in my longing to give up the pain. I just didn't believe I would ever love again.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think that's the right one. Yeah. And I think that's the one that I've heard. Yeah.
She's a Bulgarian French singer. She is still alive. And still singing. I think
that's
her latest
combo
release.
Right there.
Yeah, she released a song 6 months ago. I told you, I did a deep dive.
Nice.
And by deep dive, I got bored in the hour before you sent me the Zoom link.
Gotcha. That sounds like what I do, so no worries. Yeah. But I mean, he's you're right. I completely agree with what you're saying. It's more of like about the magic of Christmas than it is like the romance. Whereas usually it's like the romance and then it just happens at, you know, Christmas time.
Christmas time. Yeah.
But it follows that standard, like the big developer sends their lackey into town who starts really becoming enamored with the whole town and especially one particular lady. They fight the big developer and then everything is saved.
It reminds me of Christmas in the Smokies.
Oh, I forgot. Yeah, I like that one.
I did like that one. It was real cheesy, but
it was super
but the
cheesy,
big developer vibes, like all everybody was hot in that movie.
We used to have a little it was called Dasher Pie Company. Like they would serve pie and coffee and hot chocolate and stuff like that inside our store. We closed it once COVID hit, but like they had a TV that the patrons could watch. And so one of the movies they put on like all the time was Christmas in the Smokies.
Just like year round. I mean, I guess because you work in like a cool Christmassy store, but yeah, that's pretty awesome.
So I know which one you're talking about. Yeah. But yeah, it's, there's a lot of those, that kind of, you know, big developer guy. And then he has a, I don't know, he falls for the girl and has a crisis of conscience. So like you could see all the makings here, but the romance of it wasn't quite there yet.
I've read enough romance novels in the last like year to just like pop out, pick out all the tropes.
Yeah.
I'm just like insta-love, single dad, small town, big company. Like, oh, I wrote some while I was writing notes. I wrote some predictions down. I was like, I think this is what's going to happen. I think this is who this is, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, on the nose every time.
You read well, these movies. The like one good thing about this movie is that you never get ahead of it. You know what I mean?
Like,
like everything just flows. There's no need to think. It literally just kind of.
Honestly, if I didn't like take notes, I think I would have enjoyed the whole movie more.
That's a lie.
I would have fallen asleep. I would have changed the channel because I remember I was actually taking notes and I still would check Facebook.
Well, full disclosure, the first time I saw, because I've seen it twice now, the first time I saw it, I didn't start paying attention until after the little girl was lost and they found her. So I was on my phone the whole time.
That's the most of the movie.
I know. The second time I watched it this morning and I was like, you know, before work, I was like, I have to watch this. I got to know what's going on. And so, yeah.
I started it last night. I tried not to procrastinate, but you know, ADHD. So I started it last night and I got to the 25 minute mark and I was like, I give up. I am not in the mood. I have a tummy ache. So I finished it today. And I was like, I still wrote the minute marks whenever I took a pause. So I was like, I'm just going to note this so I could just keep going on with my movie and finish it.
Well, I think you did more work than I have. So I've like, I tried looking up, you know, stuff, anything I could about this movie. There's not a lot out there. There's a lot of like just little brief summaries. That's really it. Like you can find, you know, on IMDb you can find like director info and you know all the production stuff, but like that's really it. There's no like deep dives into the production of it, which I get it, it's a made for TV movie in the 80s, there's not going to be a lot of that, but you know usually I can find like something. This was one that was
behind the scenes,
right,
of this
movie. I want to know what's happening. The only thing that I really know, and there's a couple of little teeny tiny bits of trivia, but I know that he wrote one of his songs for that 86 album that he released because the Challenger exploded while they were filming this movie. So he wrote that song. I think it's like Flying to Me or something like that.
Oh, I started listening to it.
And then he released it on his album along with Love Again, the song that he sings to the little girl.
You know, Love Again came out 2 years before the movie. Love Again came out 2 years before the movie. Like the song came out 2 years before the movie.
Oh, well, I only know the version from that album on the 86 album that came out that year. So cool.
Was it his greatest hits album already?
No, it was One World.
Oh, I think
from 80s.
I've seen the cover of it just because I kept watching YouTube videos. But yeah, it keeps saying that this Love Again was released in 1984 and then they probably re-released it because it looks like
they probably re-released it. Yeah. Well, it makes sense, especially if it's in his TV movie, you know?
Yeah.
Well, and you're right. Yeah. Different versions as well. So it makes sense. But yeah, I mean, like that's that. And I think they borrowed like a nativity set from a Denver courthouse and people were freaking out because they thought it was stolen. Like no one had remembered that like they had lent it out.
Oh, that's so funny.
Right? So it's like, okay.
Like, well, the Denver courthouse. Oh yeah. We lent it to John Denver. The man who named himself after our city or whatever. Well, I don't know. I literally just lied. I just made that up. I have no idea.
Well, it could be because I think his real name is like Deutschdorf or something like that. Deutschendorf. So
I wouldn't be surprised if he was like, what did he speak German? Because one of the clips that I watched today, it was just like he was on a TV show with Sylvie Vartan, and they were singing Love Again, and the host was just like speaking in German.
Oh, wow.
TV in the '80s.
I mean, with a name like that, Deutschendorf, I wouldn't doubt if he knew maybe a little bit, or is at least of that descent that
he feels, you know, Amish. Something.
It could be. I honestly have no idea. I'm from South Texas, where we're all like, you know, Garcias and Salinas and Rodriguez, you know.
So, I lived in Wisconsin for a while, and like all of the Amish people around there, so in this movie, there's like carriages going down the road. That was not weird to me, because right. I've seen that before with the Amish people, but like all like usually of like German background, and they speak a mm-hmm. dialect of German, I would call it. I don't necessarily know if it's a separate language. It totally could be. But yeah, they all speak
right.
German around each other, like it's a form of German, and they call it like us the English. I'm like, well, you know, I'm Filipino, but whatever.
Yeah, it's like try Spanish, man.
try Mexican.
I'm a little bit of everything. I'm not English. No, I gotcha. Yeah, so it starts off really this film in New York. Well, no, actually, I guess technically it starts off first in the town where we get a little taste of of some of these guys around here. The cab driver, I think I remembered him as like the bartender from Murphy Brown. That's really the only thing that I kind of knew him from. Yeah.
I used to watch that with like my parents, but like, I mean, I was too young to like recognize like, what is it? Not main actors.
Candace Bergen.
Yeah. That's the only person I recognize from that.
Right. Well, it helps that she's still been pretty famous after that. You know,
yeah.
She did, what was it? Miss Congeniality.
Miss Congeniality. They filmed it in San Antonio.
Yeah.
And Sandra Bullock lives in Austin and has a restaurant here. Because I live in Austin.
Does she really? I didn't know she had a restaurant. I gotta go.
Yeah, it's called Waltzon's Fancy and Staple. It's like a deli / general store type vibe, but like in down, like right outside of downtown, near downtown Austin.
Okay.
Where I used to go to the spa. When the movie started and it said, "Welcome to Georgetown," I was like, "Oh my God, Georgetown, Texas? 30 minutes north of me?"
Yeah.
And I was like, wait.
No, Georgetown, Colorado.
Colorado always tries to take our stuff, I swear.
Right?
Now we've got two Texans on the podcast. We're just going to dunk on Colorado and California.
as long as they don't want Whataburger, we're keeping that for us.
Oh. I live between two Whataburgers. I have two Whataburgers less than a mile and a half from me.
That's awesome.
I'm so privileged.
Yeah, there's two about that same distance for me as well. One's like further north, and there's one that's like maybe about 5 minutes away. So that's usually the one we go to. But yeah, they're not too bad. But yeah, so we're kind of introduced a little bit to this town. There's a lot of banjos. There's a lot of... a lot of banjos, yeah. I'm not going to go like get too bogged down into the details, but essentially we're introduced to George Billings, which is John Denver's character, and he's an architect at this firm that I guess they've been given some sort of tax write-off thing. They have to spend this money before the new year. I don't know exactly what it's...
rich people problems that I don't understand. Yeah.
Something I've never had to deal with ever.
Yeah, they had to like spend this money on land before a certain date, or they would lose this big contract with the fancy corporation.
Right,
and then
right.
John Denver, I'm the architect. And then the exposition happening all around him. Like, I was like, this is so much exposition right now. I have to pause this.
And it was clunky exposition too. It was all, and this and this and this, and this and this and this, and now this and this. I mean, like, nothing was smooth, but.
They really relied on the guy who played the Renfield character, his boss. They really relied on his acting. He's really good. And he reminded me of the dad from Psych. Like, I thought that was the dad from Psych.
Oh,
and then
Corbin Burnson? Yeah.
Yeah, and then I IMDb'd it, and I was like, not.
Yeah, no, he's played by Edward Winter, who I think was in MASH. I think that's where I recognized him. He was like a colonel or something in MASH. I don't really know him that well, but But yeah, I thought he did a great job too.
He was excellent. He was such a good actor.
Yeah, that completely, you know, sleazy 80s, you know, yuppie type. I mean, you know, he
boss,
nailed it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. And so he has to send George to Denver. Well, not to Denver, excuse me, to Georgetown.
Georgetown. I hated that so much. I was like, George has to go to Georgetown.
I know. I might just keep calling him John Denver because it might be easier.
Do it. Yes, please.
Yeah. So he sends John Denver to Georgetown to scout it out because I guess mm-hmm. he had done something similar in Vermont where he like kind of went, he pretended he was a tourist, reported back, sent some photos, did some mock-ups, and then they bought some land and started doing condos and all that fancy building
developers.
Stuff.
Oh, I know all exactly. about that in Austin, Texas. So much has been built. In the last
you have
years.
No idea what I'm talking about. Yeah. So he sends him, he convinces his daughter, who's like all excited, you know, for Christmas. This is like the first Christmas that they're going to spend together after their, her mom, you know, his wife has passed.
She died the last Christmas.
The last Christmas. Yeah. This is literally like almost a year. Yeah. It's crazy. And he already finds love. Spoiler alert.
I'm so angry about this whole relationship.
It's super fast, right? And
it's
like
insta love,
like no substance.
Right, you're correct. There's nothing for them to hold on to except each other and the power of Santa Claus. That's it.
It's very powerful. So he convinces his daughter. He says, "Yeah, you know, my boss is sending us because he thinks." You know, she says because of work. He's like, no, he thinks we need to, you know, take some time away because your mom died at Christmas and we need to just maybe not be here. Yeah. And I was like, okay, well, you're lying to your kid. That's not great, but all right. Mm-hmm. So they get there and they're picked up by the cab driver, Bud Sawyer. Yeah. And so he's like this just lovable, kind of jolly gent, I guess. I don't know
what's the best word. He's like the town nice guy. That's like he's like the town uncle. He's just so nice. And says hey to everybody. And I loved how everybody in the town kept mentioning how much his car sucked. And I was like, there's something's gonna be there. You are
No, that's not gonna come back at all.
Yeah. Foreshadowing. Who is she?
Yeah, well, I mean, it didn't help that, you know, it made like all sorts of noises and then it just kind of like exploded, I guess, or, you know, kaput finally after he picks him up and drops him off.
Yeah, I love that. That was my favorite death scene in a movie. A car dies and the whole town just like gathers around it. Not in mourning, but like they just all of a sudden they just crowded around it. And I'm just like, y'all know that this car was going to die.
Yeah. I mean, everybody was talking about it. Like, why is it so unexpected all of a sudden? Especially after a trip to like what presumably isn't close, you know, the airport.
Because I would imagine they flew into Denver. Like, I'm not being silly about it. Because like the Mr. Renfield did mention, it's like, oh, it's like an hour outside of Denver or something like that.
Right. So he had to drive all that way. So, of course, that car was going to die.
My husband's 2005 Toyota Corolla, he doesn't even like driving it into downtown, let alone 100 miles away in bed. And that car, it looks like the car from Halloween Town, honestly. It was one of those old cars, but it had like Christmas stuff all over it. Which
is a huge reason it's got like a big bow on the back and lights. I noticed the lights on the trim, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, that car was sick. I really liked that car. Like, out of this whole movie, I just realized that car was pretty awesome.
Yeah. It probably was the best character in the movie. Yeah.
I know. It died and came back to life. The power of Santa. Sorry, spoiler again.
You're giving away the plot. No. So they get to town. He's I guess has been taking pictures, although they don't really, they show him taking like one picture and then he goes to like mail it.
So it's so weird to me, that whole scene like just tripped me out. I really had to rewind it. The cab stops just like on the side of the road. He gets out to take a picture. his daughter goes to move out and he goes, get back in the car. And then he just like gets back into the car and then they don't go anywhere. And then they get back out again. I was like, what is, what is happening? I was like, didn't you guys park to go to the hotel? Like, I was so confused.
Well, so he goes to like mail this film that I guess he's been taking pictures of all this time and we're just not aware of.
I didn't realize it was film.
But like he meets, you know, the potential love interest. I think her name is Susan. And she's like, no, you can't mail that. Today is letter day. It's a Sunday. We're only open for letters to Santa today, special. And which I was like, just take his packet. Why?
Right. So I found it really weird that she wouldn't just take the package. I agree with you on that one. I also found it weird that he was a pushover to absolutely, John Denver was a pushover to everyone. And then he got some cojones when he's talking to Susan. I was like, absolutely not. This doesn't make sense. Cause he was being a real Karen about it. I wrote that in my notes. I was like, he's being a Karen. He just needs to come back tomorrow. She needs to chill the F out. This is letter to Santa day. Right in front of his daughter too. I hated both of them in this instant, but I did side with her because I'm a feminist.
Well, I sided with her because it's like, dude, it's a Sunday. No one's gonna come to pick up this mail anyway, like till tomorrow. So who cares? Just say, okay, I'll come back tomorrow. But anyway, he finally caves and he's like, okay. But because she says something like you are not, or your kind is not allowed to mail something today, you know, I was like, oh, snap. Like, you tell him.
Susan popped off.
Yes, she did. It's funny, though, because every time I see her, I think of Malcolm in the Middle. She's like the mom from Malcolm in the Middle. So it was a little bit hard for me to picture her as like the romantic lead of a movie. It just, there was like a little bit of a cognitive dissonance at first.
And yeah, because she was like significantly younger, like 15 years younger. I think I had Googled her birth date. I think she might have been in her like mid to early 20s.
So I think she was born in 55. So she was like 31, but he was born in like 42 or 43. So he was already like 43 or 44, something like that.
Do you remember there was a 12-year age gap?
Yeah, it was like 12, 13 years, something like that. You know, I mean, once you're past like 25, it really doesn't matter, I guess. But that's
I always like checking it just because sometimes it creeps me out. It just gives me the
itch. It depends. Yeah, it depends on the pairing. It can be like off-putting, but it can also be like, okay, I get it. No big deal.
If they point out the age difference and that's like a kind of thing, that's different than like just having a good... John, like an old ass John Denver court, like a young woman.
At least it was only 12 years and not not like 20 or something. So that would have been, I think, a little bit creepier there with John Denver.
Yeah, especially if they didn't acknowledge it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know what it reminded me of? A View to a Kill. It was like the very last Roger Moore James Bond film. And so he was already like almost 60. And the love interest was played by Tanya Roberts, who was like 23 or something. Like her mom was younger than him. And so that's when he realized like, okay, I got to retire as James Bond.
Like, these Bond girls keep getting younger, but I keep getting older and the Bond girls keep staying the same age. Whatever that Matthew
All right.
He is beloved in this city.
Love him. I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it at all. So they go to the hotel. We're introduced to Aunt Henny, who I guess is Bud's sister. She runs the hotel.
Oh, they were brother and sister. I thought they were just friends.
Sister Act. Yeah. No, I think they're sister and brother, but I don't know. I could be making that up, honestly.
It says something if neither of us knows.
I know, right? they check in, and he makes a call to his boss. Yeah, everything's cool. It's beautiful, whatever. You know, and then they like go eat something, and Aunt Henny mm-hmm. is like, once Susan comes in, and she's like, "Oh, you got to meet this guy. Like, there's a single man here. You gotta
oh
meet him."
Gosh, I like super in my notes. Matchmaker. I know Henny in my notes. It's like Henny tries to set Susan up, then Susan apologizes to John Denver.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, I was not into that. I was not into it. I said no, ma'am. And then he lets his daughter just go off with a stranger.
With a stranger, yeah. That was the weirdest thing. Yeah, he gets this is where he gets the call from the boss, and so he like goes to take it. He's like, "Hey, why don't you go with you?" It was like, "No, I don't think so."
Like, this kid is like 9 years old, but still, So with the matchmaking thing, I've lived in like literally a village of 800. Like I lived in a small town in Wisconsin. I've said that so many times, but when there's like a single man that is like, doesn't even matter if he's good looking or not, the women will be all over him because he's just he's someone new,
right? Well, that's exactly what happened.
There should have definitely been more women after him than just Susan and Henny.
Well, especially he's John Denver. Once they hear him sing, you got to be like, oh yeah.
Only one girl got to hear him sing this movie, and it was his daughter.
Which I gotta say, I think like the best love story was between the daughter and Scruff. Like I think they had the most chemistry.
You are not incorrect, and I have a whole theory for like the right future.
Yeah, me too. They totally get married later on in life. Like they you know, they're like best friends. They date. They're like, well, let's just stay best friends. And then they realize that they're meant for each other and they get married later on. Right. I mean, that was my headcanon.
Mine is different. Just like slightly different.
Okay.
Okay. So Scruff moves. Scruff saves her eventually in the movie. Sorry, we haven't gotten there yet. And then she's like, oh my God, I love Scruff as like a 9 or 10 year old or whatever she is. Then he moves away and she ends up marrying Grover.
Oh yeah.
And then after they graduate college, after they, you know, graduate high school and college, they get married. Her and Grover get married. And then he like cheats on her with like someone like his boss's wife or something. And then she divorces. And then when she's like 35, she meets Scruff again. And then they fall in love and it's happily ever after.
That's a Hallmark movie right there.
I know, right? both of our versions of like Scruff and Alex's love are like, they're great. I would see either of those movies before I would watch this one again. Yeah.
It's funny to think that like a 9 and what a 12, or he was almost 12, a 10-year-old and an 11-year-old or 9-year-old, 11-year-old had more chemistry than like the two romantic leads of this movie.
Honestly, Scruff, it was not believable to me that he was 11/12 because his jawline
he looked like 14. Yeah.
I was like, this 14, is creepy, 15, but maybe. I was like, this is the 80s. I will accept it. They don't do anything inappropriate.
A lot of stuff. We got away with a lot of stuff back in the 80s. she goes away with the lady and everyone keeps saying, oh, you'll find out about all what the happenings here at the tree lighting tonight. And so they go to the tree lighting and they hear the main story. And this is like, I guess the gist of the whole thing. There's a legend that 100 years ago, while some settlers were on their way west, I guess, or something, they were like running low on food. It was snowing. Mm-hmm. They really couldn't go anywhere. So they just kind of decided to stay in place. And like the stranger appears, he had like a white beard, hint, hint.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very hungry. He says like, can you spare any food? And like most of the town was like, we can't, we barely have any food ourselves. We don't know how we're going to make it. And one little boy like went around and grabbed a little bit of food from like every cart and eventually like gave some to the man, who said, you know, like, thank you, you know, you'll be rewarded. And then like he disappeared. And then like when they woke up the next morning, and this was like on Christmas Eve, so on Christmas Day, mm-hmm. all their stuff was like completely filled with food and supplies. And so it was like they're going to be blessed for like 100 years or something. And so that was like the big thing because of this mm-hmm. little boy's kindness. And because of that, this town is like super into, well, we know it had to be Santa. And mm-hmm. so that's why they always write their letters. They have a whole day dedicated. Well, they'll like completely open the post office just for that. And they, every year they tell the story and light the tree. And so yeah. that's where he hears the story and he's kind of like, okay, this is cool.
Yeah. My favorite part about that, like, whole little town telling people to write letters is when, like, adults would remind kids, like, young kids, for their parents to turn in their letter. So I was just like, oh, yeah. The parents still, like, turn in their letter. And, like, the kids remind them, like, Mom and Dad, turn in your Santa letter. And they all take it seriously. I just think that's really, mm-hmm. I don't know, I just found that charming.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about it, and I was like, huh, I don't think I've written a letter to Santa in years. So you know, that's kind of cool. Yeah. So the story is, you know, charming little
legend,
story.
It's, yeah.
It's nice. Yeah, yeah, this little legend. And so all things are, he starts moving on. He's like, okay, the next day, and I guess he spends the whole day because he needs a tour guide. So he asks the lady, you know, Susan, to be his guide. And this is where they're supposed to like be bonding and falling in love. Oh, but it didn't really feel very much like it, you know?
It felt so forced. Like their attraction to each other felt forced. Like it wasn't like a real enemies to lovers situation. It was really just like this rude stranger, but I like him for some reason because he's a single dad and this town has slim pickings. And he's John Denver. Their whole romance like really pissed me off. Like structurally it pissed me off.
Yeah, I get it though. I totally get it because it did feel really forced. And then they would argue about stuff. And it was like, okay, so they're supposed to kind of hate each other and then they're gonna fall in love, but they never quite made that turn, you know. I mean, we were told that they did, but we weren't mm-hmm. shown that they did. And I think that's kind of what their biggest flaw in the movie, you know.
You're so right. You're so smart, Jerry. You hit the nail on the head, and I didn't have the words for it, but you got it. But I did think they had a little bit of chemistry with each other. But
they
I
did.
Think
they did have, yeah.
Because Susan's a really good actress. Whatever.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, same thing. Yeah.
Sean Denver.
Actor, actress.
R.I.P.
Yeah. yeah but the little girl, his daughter, notices that they're, you know, kind of flirty, I guess.
She's too smart,
and so she like asks him, are you ever gonna fall in love again? Like straight up, like, wow, okay, you just going for mm-hmm. it.
Yeah, she's too smart.
Yeah, she really is. She's like very observant, and so he sings the song to her. Love Again. Mm-hmm. Which is actually it's a pretty good song.
Yeah, not gonna lie, I've listened to it a lot today. It's pretty good, and I prefer the version that he did in the movie than to his other two versions.
It was nice. It was a little bit slower. There were like string backgrounds. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was much more orchestral. The other ones are kind of standard. The one from the 86 album is it's actually a little more up-tempo.
Puppy,
and there's like a strong
backbeat. I meant and you're peppy. Like, huh.
Peppy, yeah, I knew what you meant. I knew exactly what you meant.
I think it was like pump high, like high energy, pump up, and then peppy.
Right.
Oh, also, she was giving him that tour of the city, the tour of the town.
Town,
I would not do that for free. That was a lot of effort. That's a whole horse. That's her time. was it a weekday? She's the postmaster.
Yeah. Well, remember, she got Bud to fill in, the cab driver, because he's the assistant. So.
And his car was dead, so.
I don't know. Maybe she's up a shift. Well, and he even asks her to the dance later on, so maybe that's like her fee. It's like, you've got to take me out on a date now.
You have to take me out on a date to my own town at a party with like free food and drinks. Okay. Okay, John Denver. I'm trying not to get so frustrated at this relationship. I'm trying to accept it as just what's on the paper / in the movie.
Yeah. Well, we also find out that the mayor, who happens to also be the banker, has to like foreclose essentially on Kurtwood Smith. And I guess his character name is Jake Richards. Jake, yeah. So
I didn't even have to look at notes. I remembered it, baby.
Wow, that's good. I did. I couldn't remember. I kept wanting to call him like Clarence from RoboCop.
I just kept calling him. I was like Red from that 70s show. Like,
yeah. Red.
And I kept calling Susan the mom from Malcolm in the Middle. Like, I would say that whole phrase in my head when I thought of her.
My initial intro was talking about the mom from Malcolm in the Middle and like RoboCop's villain. I ended up scrapping it, but yeah, what I was originally going to say was that. So I'm totally there with you.
I'm surprised and like not surprised at like how many like famous actors and stuff were in like a made for TV movie in the 80s, and now in like
it was the 2020s,
yeah. they're still working and doing their thing. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is.
Some years later.
Yeah, there was a lot of like character actor, you know, in the supporting roles, like just guys that have done like tons of TV as like, you know, they're just good character actors, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, anyway, so I'm going to kind of skip around a little bit, but so okay. His boss comes into town and kind of exposes him as like the, you know, oh, by the way, my guy came in and he did this fantastic job. Look, check out this model of the future and the progress. And the whole time we find out that I guess John Denver is originally from a small town. They wanted to build like a big shopping center that I guess was kind of in the center of like several small towns, and it would have like, I don't know, created jobs and commerce and whatever. But his town was opposed to it. And so it didn't get built and people just left to go find jobs other places. And it was kind of deserted. And so his town basically just didn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
And so that's why he's kind of more open to progress and stuff like that. And this is like one of those classic Hallmark things, you know, like the small town, you got to keep the small town vibes. Mm-hmm.
He would not shut up about Greenville, Nebraska. Like I don't have to look at my notes for that either, because I remember him.
I remember
Greenville, Nebraska. I grew up in a small town, Greenville. We get it, John Denver.
Oh, I totally skipped over it, but I do want to talk about the dance really quickly.
Oh yeah, I hated it
because the dance is where we get a ton of like violin and banjo stuff.
The band was cool. I'll give them that. I like country and folk on the down low. Don't tell anybody. But like,
I don't know what you're talking about.
I know. Thank you. But like that music in there was like cool. I was like, dance to that.
Yeah. It would have been fun to dance to. But this is where, like, I guess the girl, his daughter, what's her name? Alex, right? Alex. This is where Alex kind of meets Scruff, I guess, really.
Oh my God, she just gets on his horse and they take off. What? Is that right? Is that during the dance?
I don't remember if it's during the dance or if it's later. I know she's like trying to talk with him because he's like being kind of rude. He's like, my, you know, we got to move because my pa's going to lose his ranch. And
you know what? I skipped ahead. My bad. He was
I think it was later awkwardly. On. And she's like, please stay, come back. And he just like rides off in his horse. He just kind of wanted to show up and like scope it out and, you know, get like one last look at, I guess, the town dance. I don't know. But like, that's their first hint of whatever. Meanwhile, while this is going on, Aunt Henny is also trying to organize like the town Christmas Eve nativity play.
Mm-hmm.
And John Denver's daughter wants to be in it and wants to stay for Christmas. And he was only supposed to stay for like a couple of days.
This was random.
I don't know. It just seemed awkward to me.
Yeah. Definitely was just like shoehorned in. Oh, let's just have like her be the nativity play, even though she's only going to be in town for like 2 days. It was weird.
Well, that's right. She was just in the chorus.
Were the scripts honestly, I'm asking this as an honest question. Even though I grew up in like Catholic school and stuff, I never was in nativity plays.
Right.
But like, is it like a universal script for everybody? Because she was like feeding the kid lines and she's like, I was an angel back in New York. And like, what? I didn't understand.
So I think for the line of the angels, they most, at all the churches I've been to, they typically just stick with like the gospel, like the actual quote from the gospel, you know.
I forget that, but the Bible is the script.
But it could be like, which version are you using? Are you using like the King James version, or you know, the Douay Rheims version, or using like a completely different translation? So the fact Bible? That like she was able to quote the exact same version, that's a little bit suspect. So you know.
We should invest.
But yeah, so there's like that subplot. But anyway, his boss comes to town with like his whole entourage, which I thought was strange.
Yes. They seemed very lemming-like. It was really weird.
It was weird. Yeah. They were like complete yes men.
Mm-hmm.
And so he outs George. Everybody's angry with him. And George actually like goes up to see Jake's ranch, and he talks with Jake a little bit, and he's like, come to the town meeting that we're having. And Jake's like, yeah, I'm not doing that.
His boss was like, call a town meeting. And I was like, can he do that? Can John Denver just call a town meeting?
Right? Like, the stranger round them up, in boys? Town. Why would anybody listen to you about a town meeting, especially like this close to Christmas? That just doesn't make any sense.
Like a town meeting on like 2 hours notice?
I don't know, but challenge accepted. I'm gonna go try that.
Let's go to Georgetown, Texas, and try to do that.
Town meeting. Yeah, it's the craziest thing. So everybody kind of hates him. Jane's mad at him. Mm-hmm. She leaves in a huff. But his daughter gets mad at him also because she realizes, oh, we came here for work. Like, you lied to me. We're not here to spend Christmas together. And she just runs away. Legit. And so he has to, he's looking, he goes to Susan for help. And she's like, okay, let's try to find her. Susan says something about like, maybe she's hiding from you. And that's when he realizes, oh yeah.
Mm.
Alex had mentioned her and Scruff went to like this hideout of his. And so he drives back to Jake's ranch and he's like, I think Scruff might be able to find her. And Scruff's like, yeah, I know where she is. If she's hiding, I know where she is.
Saved her life. Scruff saved her life.
I'm telling you, there's like the real romantic.
I know. I just keep imagining like
those two.
If I was like a 9-year-old and like this 12-year-old boy saved my life, I would love him forever. Like forever. And then if I re-met him as an adult, I would take all the things I learned in my youth and apply it to that relationship.
Yep.
It makes me swoony just thinking about like that possible romance more than possible, like Malcolm in the Middle's mom and like John Denver.
This fiction that we created.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like they literally save her from like, you know, from dying of exposure.
Yeah, and the shack was falling on top of her too.
Yeah, exactly. So he's like super grateful. So he goes back to Susan the next day. He's like, look, we have to do this. I was fired, but even if I wasn't, I don't care. We have to stop the sale of this ranch. We have to stop the guy, you know, the developer from buying Renfield. So they come up with a plan, I guess, randomly. And so later on, they're at the nativity play that night, and he stands up instead of the pastor giving the sermon or whatever. He stands up and like says, all right, we can save this if we all like get second mortgages on our stuff, put our our stuff, businesses as up as collateral to save this one dude.
I'm
just like,
I got what he was like trying to do, but like I love my fellow neighbor, but I would not put a second mortgage on my home to save someone. Right. Yeah. Not in this economy, at least. Maybe in the 1986 economy, but 2022, absolutely not. My rent just went up. I'm paying too much to live in a city as it is. But like, I love that in this nativity play church, there's more people as a dance than in the church. Like, it's like a mini town meeting. I just thought it was
funny. Yeah, it really is. It really is. So he stands up. For some reason, right when he's about to give this speech, that's when the boss comes in.
Right. It was so dramatic. I was like, is something going to happen? I love
that perfectly convenient writing, you know?
It's like, right as he's about to be like, F the man walks right in.
Exactly.
I also did, as like a criticism, I thought it was really weird that he felt entitled to this town's time and attention, especially after he messed so many things up. Like, it was kind of embarrassing for him to stick around after being found out that he worked for a land developer. Like, right. I would have just been like, picked up my daughter, but like, deuces, I'm going to go be embarrassed in New York City and not in this tiny town.
We got Rockefeller Center to go to.
Right.
But yeah. So he gives this whole big impassioned speech. Everybody like, hey, I'll put up the bank. I'll put up, you know, our business, whatever. I'll put up the cab company. And so they all go to Jake's house and they're like, by the way, your debt is canceled. You've paid it all back.
Yeah, I did like the little parallel to their town legend where the little boy took a little bit off of each person's plate and it made a meal, and then everybody paid a little tiny bit and it paid off the Scruffs family's mortgage. I thought that was cool.
That was kind of cool.
I'm loath to admit that I thought that was pretty that was pretty smart.
You know, I think if we just think of this as like the setup of a love story between Alex and Scruff later on, right? I think it's just a better movie.
If this was a prequel to like the real Christmas story.
Exactly. Yeah.
Gosh. What if it's like the 115th anniversary of the Christmas legend, and then they met back up there at the lighting of the Christmas. Oh my God, Jerry, I have to write this story.
I'm in. I'm all in.
Oh my gosh, Jerry. I'm going to recast you as the new taxi driver in this story.
Okay. Yeah. It's funny you say that, because I was wondering if you could be in this like movie, who would you be? Like,
oh my God, who could I be? The possibilities. Let me see. I really have to think about it. Right now, my instincts are Aunt Henny.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Or like, oh, I really liked the old mechanic dude. I would be him.
Mm-hmm.
I would be a wily old mechanic person.
Which I think he was like the in Teen Wolf. I think he was the liquor store owner.
Oh yeah, I remember that movie. I remember being like really scared for the guy in that part. Okay, yeah.
I think if I was in this movie, I mean, I think I probably would be Bud.
Bud's pretty cool. He's like I love Bud's character. He's just like all so happy and hopeful and like positive all the time. And he's always like got something kind and a compliment to say that's genuine and like a little cheeky wink. He's adorable.
Yeah, because even when everybody's like upset at John Denver, like they just found out that, you know, he kind of sold him out. He's like, you know, I believe that you didn't do it on purpose, you know, or that you didn't really feel bad. So don't, you know, don't, I don't blame you. It's cool.
He's nice
to him right away.
Protect
Although I think it would
costs.
Be fun to be Renfield's character.
Oh, the boss?
Like just chewing the scenery, you know.
He's like, fresh air. I'm going to buy this whole town. I would love to be as rich as
Renfield. Nobody wants deserts. That's too hot in the summer. Oh, man. Yeah.
When I do have to mention that I just remembered, when they went up to the Jake and Scruff's house to tell them that they paid off the mortgage, I loved how it was like, he was just like, Jake was just dead silent. And he's like, I don't know what to say. Dead silence. And then the whole crowd of people just starts singing Silent Night at him. I was like, whoa, this is awkward. Like, he doesn't know what to say. So they'll sing Silent Night. I was like, I saw what you guys tried
John
to do.
John Denver started it.
He would. And his voice was the loudest. I heard the audio. I heard the audio put him a little bit louder than everybody else.
That was funny. That was very awkward. Yes. And then, yeah. And then it's the next day and Bud gets like a new motor for his car.
Right. After the town was like trying to like figure out a way to get him a new motor and then failing. And then all of a sudden Christmas Day, he's like, hey, everybody, my car goes beep beep now. And then he just like takes
Santa,
off.
Yep. And then the little girl gets the dollhouse. So she got what she wanted because Scruff's farm was, or ranch, I guess, was saved. And she got her dollhouse. So I think she even said something like, I got double what I wanted.
Yeah. You're a greedy little girl. But I wrote, I was like, the creepy dollhouse is back. I think it's kind of weird that her architect father built her a fancy dollhouse. I was like, was this too on the nose?
A little bit. Yeah. A little bit. But it does make me wonder, you know, what would you say would be your happiest moment with this movie?
Ooh, my happiest moment. I was about to be like, the credits. No, absolutely. Actually, the credits angered me. The happiest moment. Oh, man. Probably when, the legend part. I really liked that one. I really thought that whole legend bit was charming.
Yeah.
Like, just genuinely charming and like sweet and wholesome.
That's actually mine as well. It was a cool little cute little story, and they were surrounded by the tree. It was like those old school 80s decorations on it. So I got all the feels, man.
Yeah, absolutely. I felt like that part. I was like, oh my God, I wish I was in that town. Like I could really feel like I wanted to be there. And I felt like I almost shared their excitement. Like I was getting the like fringes of their vibes. It was a great scene.
Yeah, exactly. But now we come to my favorite part of the show, which is a little segment I like to call Gag Me with a Spoon. So this is where we do our best impression of our least favorite part of the movie. As a guest, I'll let you go first. Just kind of set it up a little bit for us.
You know what, Jerry? This was the cringiest part of this movie. And I felt it absolutely appropriate because I feel so cringy about to reenact it. Like I've been physically ill about this all day, but I was like, I have to do this now because it made me cringe so dang hard.
All right.
Jerry, I just need you to ask me one question. Could you ever be in love again? You just need to ask it to me.
Okay. Could you ever be in love again?
I don't know. I didn't think it could happen again. I'm just too old and set in my ways. I was convinced I would always be lonely all of the rest of my days.
Yeah.
In my longing to... I can't even do it. I can't even finish it.
That was great. So that was amazing.
I'm just cringing so hard redoing it because like...
I think we already have a winner for the Ratties, the third Ratties. For Rattus Gag Me with the Spoon. That was awesome. That's way better than mine. Mine was I just from Renfield in the beginning, and I liked his performance, but I didn't like the way he said the very last word here. So he's talking about how they're putting their money into, you know, year-round stuff, and he goes, shade, not beachfront sands, green lawns, golf courses, shade, seasons. The way just he said seasons word. Made me laugh so hard.
I like vaguely remember that, but like half of this movie gave me secondhand embarrassment, honestly. Like
I'll try to find a better one next time. We're like 0 for 2 now.
Harry, you are such a nice cool dude. that, like, I will watch anything you ask me to watch. Like, you're so nice. I was like, look, I trust Jerry. He will. We'll have a fun time on his podcast. Whatever.
I think we're having fun. Yeah. I'm having fun.
Yeah. I wish I could have finished that song, but like, nope, moment's gone. It was too cringy.
No, it was great. You did amazing. I really enjoyed it. Like, that was like legit awesome.
Thank you. But it was really cringy. And I knew I had to do it. And the fact that I was cringing while doing it just made it so meta.
Well, and it was weird because, like, he doesn't, aside from like when they sing as a town, it's not like he sings any other time. It's so out of the blue, you know?
He shoehorns that. Okay, this is where I'm going to go on a little tiny rant. He shoehorned that song in so hard. Like, he didn't have to be a widower. He could have just been a single dad. But like, the way Alex had to set it up, could you ever love again? He's like, love again. Now that you say that, let me just make this movie a musical. The song came out before the movie even did, so he had to have been like, oh, this is the perfect time to put in one of my songs because it's made for TV and on CBS, and all the moms love this. I can't tell you how aggravated I was today, and then I had to listen to the song over and over and over again to try to remember it, and then it grew on me.
It actually is a pretty good song. I like the song. It was just very out of place.
Oh, absolutely. So. That's why I was just like, John Denver. I was wondering who would we recast as John Denver? Like, who would we pick? I was thinking Harry Styles, because like,
well, that'd be interesting. That's Styles an interesting choice.
But he's also a singer that's now becoming an actor.
Right. Yeah. I don't know if I know any modern singers. I think if we're looking at someone that's kind of like John Denver level, and I mean like someone that's actually a singer that's not an actor, I might go with, and this is an out there choice, Bruno Mars.
Okay, I think that would be really, really cool.
Mostly, I mean, I have no idea what his acting's like, but
I don't either, but that would be like a really interesting. I think he would have to be a more like suave dad. He'd be like, whip off his sunglasses, he'd be like, what's up, sup sexy, like just saying that to Aunt Henny walking in, he's like, sup sexy.
I'm all in. Let's make this happen.
I would love Bruno, to see Harry Styles on. With Harry Styles with his British accent.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, why not make him let him be British.
Yeah, why not?
I'm down
British
with that.
People live in New York.
I liked him because I've only seen him, I think, act in that end credits tag from the Eternals movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he's been in anything else. That's all I know him from. But
he's in Dunkirk, and he's going to be in that.
Was he really?
Yeah, and he's going to be in that.
I don't even remember him in Dunkirk.
He's only like a minor character.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty sure he was in Dunkirk. He was in like an Academy Award winning movie, and a new Olivia Wilde movie she's directing.
Oh yeah,
because they're in a relationship now.
Are they really? I didn't know that.
Good, they met them on the set of that movie, and she left Jason Sudeikis, and then that's why a couple of months ago she had paper served to her process server at a convention.
Oh yeah, yeah, at the while she was giving the interview or something, and
she was like on stage giving a presentation. She got served.
Oh, snap. Oh, that's
like
bad.
It's like funny, but only from a distance, because if it happened to me, I'd be so embarrassed and pissed off.
Oh,
but
it'd be, yeah,
as a
that would be
awful. As a poor person, hilarious.
I feel you. Oh, but you know, I gotta know. So G.I. Joe taught us that knowing is half the battle. What do you think the other half is?
It's believing in Santa Claus. The other half is believing in Santa.
Singled it out, like said, you know, I mean, why didn't Bud, you know, make like a big deal out of it? He was like, Santa brought it to me. It doesn't make any sense. He completely glosses over it.
Yes, I agree. If like Bud had like his car had like started flying away and he like waved out the window, I would have accepted
like
that
ending.
Yeah. I would have accepted that I can like see, not just like surprise, you've got a new motor. Or if like when the carriage ride at the end, when John Denver and Susan are doing the carriage ride, if she would have taken off into the sky and flown on her carriage and then looked at camera and winked, I would have also accepted that as like some kind of answer. But the fact that they just like left it, no, no, sir. Mm-mm.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. They didn't tie up that bow. They needed to tie it. Yeah, I get it. So for me, I think if knowing's half the battle, the other half is getting John Denver to sing a song in his movie.
I feel like that's not a very hard thing.
Back in those days. That's like 1% of a battle, I think. Oh man, Lonnie, it's been a blast talking with you about this this trippy movie here. But you know, tell me about your show or anything else you want to plug.
Okay, so Netflix us, we have our podcast. We have like older episodes. We haven't posted new episodes, but we might have something special in the works with Scarlett in college now. I do comedy shows around Austin, Texas, usually. So if you're in the area, tell your friends come watch me around town. I have a website now. It's so weird. I don't put anything on it, but
awesome.
It's LonnieCuomo.com. So
right on.
Yeah.
Well, definitely check out the dates.
Yeah, I haven't updated it in months, but I guess I will have an excuse now.
yeah. Put those dates on. We'll this is dropping in like 3 weeks. So way, you have 3 weeks to get them on so we can promote.
So I'll do it in like 2 weeks and like 6 days.
Hey, that's fine as long as it gets done, right? I understand. I have an awesome website now too, and I haven't updated it in a few weeks, so
I should write blog posts or something. I don't know, book reviews. I should do book reviews and plug my friend's podcast.
You read a lot of books, a lot of romance novels, I always see. So right on.
Do too much.
well thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me. This was so much fun. I really enjoyed it.
It really was. And on that note, I'm going to end it by saying Santa Claus is like Christmas itself, in spirit, in giving. He's everywhere. So check us out on our social media pages, Facebook and Instagram at Totally Rad Christmas, Twitter at Rad Christmas, or our Facebook group, Totally Rad Christmas Mall and Arcade, where you can make your voice known to us as well. We post anything and everything 80s or Christmas related. And if you're feeling like Jake Richards getting his ranch back, leave us a review on iTunes. It helps us reach more people and spread some rad holiday cheer. Now, don't forget to check out our merch shop on tpublic.com and our super dope website, totallyradchristmas.com, courtesy of Tis the Podcast Elf, Tom Crow. Merry Christmas to all, and to all a safe night. Later, dudes.
What's your favorite guilty pleasure? Is it watching cheesy Christmas romances, no matter what time of year it is? For Holly Cuomo and Scarlett Alexandra, this is it. These two host the Netflixmas podcast, where they talk about the best, the worst, and the cringiest Christmas romances from all your favorite streaming services. You can listen today on Spotify, iTunes, and Podbean. And don't forget to check out their Patreon for bonus episodes. Have a very merry Netflixmas and a sappy new year.